Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:53 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 25th. Thought we'd kick off with Ocado. So it was one of the big heroes of the UK tech sector all the way through from about 2017 to 2020. And they not only were leaders in terms of delivering groceries to households, but then they also succeeded in selling some of their automated equipment to major retailers. So that really spiked the share price in 2020. But as we look at recessions and where people don't have a lot of money or they are worried about how they're going to pay their bills, well, the first thing that's going to go is luxuries. So there's a very clear ambition or conclusion that companies like Amazon take, and it's that people will pay for convenience over every other consideration. But the fate of Ocado tells a different story, and it is that convenience generally suffers at the hands of price pressures. And when people simply don't have the money, then it's just not going to fly. So we can then think about the outlook for Just Eat. So it's another major delivery company, and it's a real hero of the European tech sector. But how is it going to continue to thrive in an environment where people are really constrained in terms of their spending power? But what I found equally interesting today is that the Dollar Tree store network was down heavy, and it's because they're unwilling to raise prices. They're finding that they're not able to push on prices, so they're going to have to eat it in their margins. And the share price was down in a dynamic manner, and we've had a couple of stabs on the downside over the course of the last few months. So this is certainly suggesting some reticence to bet on the ability of discounters to continue to be able to thrive in this environment. Ross Stores, which also appeals to the lowest income demographic, has also pulled back and has rebounded with the market, is testing the region of the 200-day moving average, and it's bouncing from the region of the 2020 lows, but this is pretty much the do or die moment here. And of course, everyone is paying attention to what's going to happen in Jackson Hole, Wyoming tomorrow. The 10-year yield was down 7 basis points in here today. So there's a lot of speculation about how hawkish is the Federal Reserve going to be, or are they going to signal that the periods of 75 basis point hikes are behind us, that the next few will be 50 basis points, and after that they'll taper it down to 25. In other words, that they think the worst of the inflation is behind us, and that while it may remain high for a while longer, that that we're still going to see lower inflation in future. So this is what people are very keen to find out. And when we have bond yields down a little, then that lent some fuel to stocks. So the S&P 500 was bouncing in here today from the region of the short-term low. But of course, it could quite easily pull back tomorrow. And that's all going to be very much in very sensitive to what happens in Jackson Hole. Gold prices have also rallied over the last 3 days and are putting in a higher reaction low. But that's going to be also very influenced by what happens in Jackson Hole, too. The dollar index has pulled back over the last 3 days, but it was well off the low in here today. So I was looking at the Dutch natural gas price 3 days ago, and it looked climactic to me with an exhaustion gap, but then it popped straight back up on the upside in here today, so it's at a new high. and closing in on €300. We're seeing indiscriminate buying, and Germany in particular is very intent on not being caught short this winter. So I think it's likely they're going to be at 100% of storage capacity by November. And then the big question will be where they're going to put additional storage and how many of these FSRU units are they going to. These are the floating, or this is the FRSU, floating regasification units. Are they going to be able to get their hands on? There's only something like 54 of them in the world. And certainly Europe is going to be willing to pay a premium to get them around its coast for this winter. And that will greatly enhance the natural gas acceptance rate, because they're already at peak acceptance of natural gas at present. So we'll see tankers also doing better. And Golar LNG has been doing rather well and pushed up out of its most, well, what looks like a first step above the base over the last 2 weeks. Then let's think about the oil price. One thing that this energy crisis in Europe has very clearly signaled is that oil and natural gas are not at all the same thing. Even though what energy companies tend to do is to quote their reserves in energy equivalent barrels, when that really means that it's a lot of gas rather than oil that they're producing. But nobody's putting gas in their cars, or very few people are. And instead, oil is very much more about transportation. And the price was down a little in here today, but still holding the $100 level. So Saudi Arabia wants to have higher oil prices, and they're in a strong position to demand it, because we haven't had a lot of investment in additional new supply. I'm posting a report today by Zoltan Pozsar. One thing that is quite clear is that there are lots of challenges out there in the world, and some of them are really existential in nature. And Russia has made a very clear decision to cut itself off from the global economy, and also to antagonize its one of its biggest customers in Europe. And that's not something that's going to be repaired in a timely manner, much less if we don't see really significant regime change within Russia. So that's also breaking up the relationship between Europe and Russia, breaking up the relationship between China and the USA. I've seen interviews with Samsung's CEO, and he was asked whether Samsung would build semiconductor fabs in China, and he said they would do whatever is asked of them. And the reality is they don't have much choice. Seoul is less than 20 miles from the border with North Korea. We could have a war in a very short period of time, and everybody knows that. So South Korea isn't in a position to antagonize China, and if they were to refuse to help China to develop its semiconductor industry, then there would be a blanket ban on Samsung's exports into the country, and that would cripple the business of the entire company. Now, Samsung's been trending downwards for a year already, and it has steadied over the last couple of weeks, but we're still looking at a rather difficult environment. Samsung is the leader in memory chips, and there's plenty of those around. The Korean won is quickly devaluing, so the dollar has now broken out of what has been a really quite lengthy ranging pattern. So we've seen dollar strength being a significant factor. But it has not resulted in a lot of support for the Korean stock market. So that's we're not seeing the benefit of lower or a weaker currency on commodity exports. Then, if we think about Taiwan, well, the Taiwanese market has also pulled back violently and also rebounded, but we're still below the 16,000 level. It looks like a completed top formation. And we have the failed break above 18,000, the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, a clear breakdown, and now we're seeing a period of right-hand extension. The most important thing to bear in mind about semiconductors is that it is a highly cyclical market. And we see these kinds of patterns evolve over time, where it takes years to work off the excess inventory that comes as a result of the investment cycle. Then there's a shortage, so we get a boom in demand. There are massive capital commitments made during the boom cycle to address the supply shortage. And all of those factories open at the same time, and the supply of chips will greatly exceed demand. And we can anticipate that the stocks will price that in before it actually happens. And well, it does look like that's what's happening. The stocks have already rolled over. And then let's think about ASML. So they have orders on the books going out for years into the future. But they're also part of a highly cyclical business. So the share is now pausing in the region of the 200-day moving average, but at least it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. So this looks like more durable support having been found. It's not like the company's going bust. They'll still be selling machines for years to come. And I think it was priced in earlier on this year. And now, at least some of that enthusiasm has been taken out of the share price. But this is definitely more constructive action than we've seen in other parts of the technology sector. And I did mention Amazon earlier on, and the share is also in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it was a little steadier in here today. As we think about inflation, then we should really think about what are the driving forces behind it. The massive money printed over the course of the last 2 years is a significant factor. And then obviously we have that drove demand. So I saw an interview today with one of the Fed governors, and she said that demand is running 20% above where it was ahead of the pandemic. So that's the rationale the Federal Reserve is using, that we've had excessive demand and they're going to continue to raise rates until that demand normalizes. So that's going to represent worse sales for these big companies. And profit margins are at record highs, and sales have been greatly flattered by monetary excess. So we can anticipate that those earnings are going to deteriorate. It's going to cut into their margins. And that's not conducive to a major recovery in stocks without the valuation getting very excessive. So that's certainly in our future, as long as the Federal Reserve is tightening policy, and they're only going to begin accelerating the quantitative tightening program in September, and that is likely to have a deflationary effect. So then we can think about how does all of this corrective phase end? Well, inflationary pressures will moderate as some of those demand drivers start to moderate. That will make it easier for supply to keep up. And we've definitely had some bottlenecks in terms of supply, most particularly at ports. and that's slowed down the delivery of goods. But then a lot of services have had difficulty finding people. Having fired them, people haven't wanted to go back to work. And how do you get people to go back to work when they've decided that it's not worth their while? Well, you have to make it difficult for them. And that means there's going to have to be a recession to correct the inflationary problem. And that's pretty much where we're headed. If we just simply think about the yield curve spread, that's exactly what it's telling us. So the spread is now at 34 basis points. So it has widened out again over the last couple of days. And we don't really have to worry about big declines in the market until the spread trends up through zero. And we haven't had that just yet. But it does imply that a recession is coming. And GDP figures were revised higher, although still negative in here today. But spending is still high, and economic production is still high. So it's very arguable that we might have a technical recession, but we haven't had unemployment rise yet. And unemployment is still at very low levels. So it's logical to expect that with demand coming down, that unemployment will also rise. And it's at that point that we'll see interest rates starting to come back down. Then the bigger factors will start to come into play, like the desire to promote resource nationalism. So countries will start to be much more competitive in producing their own batteries. And that's certainly also part of this Inflation Reduction Act. And then countries will also be very keen to rearm when there's a war going on in Europe. Europe has to rearm. And when we think then about the quantity of arms that are being expended in what is effectively a conventional war in Europe, then there's going to have to be massive spending on rearmament. And that's going to happen independently of what happens in terms of interest rates. And of course, that's also inflationary, where you have government spending money that they really should be spending money on something else, but they feel like they have to buy more arms. And that's going to be a global phenomenon. So we're looking at a global rearmament, and that's going to be expensive. So that's certainly going to be beneficial for the armaments sector. And this is going to be not only a defense sector, but rather defensive, because they're looking at higher earnings over time. And then you have energy nationalization, or excuse me, independence. So Europe needs an energy independent strategy. And one thing that Russia has succeeded in doing is highlighting that having large nuclear reactors in places that can be invaded isn't perhaps such a great idea, and they can become significant targets. But you could say that about lots of institutional or I think utility type infrastructure. And the uranium ETF rebounded really quite emphatically in here this week. And it's hard to imagine how Europe, without the benefit of having large oil and gas reserves, then how can they reach energy independence without deploying nuclear? I just can't see how that's going to work. So the carbon price did start to come back down over the last few days. But, and we know that Europe has already classified nuclear energy as green. So that means that they can invest in new nuclear and they can invest in new natural gas production. And it's not going to affect the carbon price. But they are probably going to have to burn more coal this winter, and that is going to affect the carbon price. So it's steadying here in the 90 area. think we're still in a rather difficult environment, and that we're going to see a significant change in the makeup of the market over time. The companies that did best over the last 14 years were those that were able to deploy practically free capital to the greatest effect. And those that succeed in the next decade are probably going to be those that thrive better in a fragmented global economy, where there's going to have to be massive investment in nationalization, naturalization, and then also in the energy sector, the defense sectors. And we're going to have to see a lot more resource and manufacturing independence and the creation of two very different poles in the economy. And there'll be a Russian-China pole, and there'll be everybody else. And there'll be the ones that align with, of course, Russia and China will be the more despotic regimes. But the challenge is that a lot of the resources are controlled by China, and most particularly in parts of Latin America. And we would have to think that their ability to continue to source materials from the American continents is going to come into is going to come under threat. The Pax Americana and the protection of shipping lanes was something that was taken for granted in the global economy for decades, and that does not necessarily have to remain the case when there is a bipolar world. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.